Support for this podcast comes from Aluba. Aluba is a leader in data science and analytics skills assessment, offering comprehensive testing and candidate benchmarking with seamless integration into your hiring process. Aluba helps you assess the skills of data professionals in a fast and unbiased way, allowing you to uncover hidden gems which are often overlooked during manual CV screening. With Aluba, you can save the time and cost of filling data and analytics vacancies by providing an advanced online skills assessment and instantaneous feedback to all of your candidates. Find out more about Aluba at aluba.com/recruitingfuture and book a demo today. That's aluba.com/recruitingfuture. And Aluba is spelled A-L-O-O-B-A.
There's been more of scientific discovery, more of technical advancement and material progress in your lifetime and mine than in all the ages of history.
Hi everyone, this is Matt Alder. Welcome to episode 359 of the Recruiting Future podcast. There's currently much debate and discussion about the talent shortages a number of markets across the world are currently experiencing. There's a lot of focus on the issues caused by the pandemic, but it's important to remember that a lot of the challenges talent acquisition teams are facing are part of existing long-term trends that the pandemic has just accelerated. My guest this week, returning to the show to share his unique perspective on the current state of talent markets and talent acquisition, is Tim Sackett, co-host of the HR Famous podcast and president of HRU Technical Resources. It's always great to have Tim on the podcast, and he doesn't disappoint this time around. Hi, Tim, and welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure to have you on the show. For anyone listening who doesn't know you, could you just introduce yourself and tell us what you do?
Yeah, so I run an actual like technical staffing firm out of the States, and I've been doing that for like the last decade. Before that, I was a corporate HR talent acquisition leader at a number of organizations on the enterprise side, whether that's healthcare, kind of casual dining, retail. And then also within that space, I started blogging back about 10 or 11 years ago and at Fistful of Talent. And then Chris Dunn, who owned Fistful at the time, well, he still owns it, but we own it together. He challenged me to kind of start my own blog, writing around talent, HR, execution, leadership, all that good stuff. But the challenge was, hey, I want you to write every single day for a year. And I've been doing that now for a decade. So I've been writing, and then, you know, you get involved with speaking and podcasting and wrote a book and, you know, all of, and then we, you know, you and I run into each other at conferences. Well, we hope we'll soon be able to run each other.
Hopefully we will again in the future.
Exactly. We can't wait. We're desperate to get out of our bedrooms and get back to conferences.
Oh, tell me about it. Now, you've been on the show a couple of times before, and I think the last time you were on, we were actually talking about your book. Obviously, a lot's changed since then. What's your experience of the last 18 months been?
You know, again, pretty much, I believe I've been pretty fortunate overall, comparable to so many people out there. And so I'm empathetic when I talk about it because, you know, I think like the recruiting world in the US shut down, like, you know, the most of the world for a couple of months. But because we did technology and white collar kinds of roles, and people went either remote or hybrid or some combination of whatever, you know, we were back up and running by midsummer of 2020. Pretty much at full capacity to what we were. So, you know, again, we, you know, have a cloud-based stack and, you know, kind of metrics driven, and people can kind of work from anywhere. And what we found was the client base that we work with was still desperate for technical talent. So we were fortunate from that standpoint. I think we learned that, you know, in the recruiting world, you can work from anywhere, but just because you can work from anywhere doesn't mean everybody is going to prosper in that environment, right? We had people that went remote and were actually better working remote, which we were hoping, but we also had people that actually got really like worse at their job being remote. So we really had to figure out, like, it wasn't about well, of course you can do this job remote, but can you be successful at doing this job remote? Because I write about this stuff and we talk about this stuff, Matt, like I like having the microcosm of my own company to kind of test things constantly. And that was one that when people sit there, and again, you and I both know a ton of thought leaders that are like, yes, you know, remote is here forever and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm always like, be careful. I think there are people that can be successful in remote. And I think the pandemic has forced us to really look at work and where work can be done. But we can't just say arbitrarily we're now always going to have certain roles be remote, because I don't think it's just the role. I think it's the combination of the role, the technology, the person doing the role, and the company culture. When you put all those together, then we have to make decisions, right? Some people will be hybrid. Some will be full on-site premise. Some will be remote. But it's I think it's too early for us to say, oh, for sure, this is going to work for everybody, because it won't work for everybody.
Absolutely. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more there, particularly about it being too early. I mean, I think the narrative on Twitter or the news media about, are we all going back to the office? Are we never going to the office again? It seems this very black and white discussion of what's a very nuanced area. You know, I think we'll be having this debate for, you know, months, if not more years to come, in terms of working out what's going to work best.
Well, and I think we discount how difficult it is for an entry-level new person in a job, especially like a white-collar job where you can be remote. Having onboarding them, training them in a completely remote world. I go back to my own life. I had two sons that graduated university during the pandemic. Both started working in a remote way. And they really take a look. They were like, you know, one thing that both of us said, like, I don't feel like I'm connected to my company at all, which as HR leaders, we should be panicking and going, wait a minute, like, you know, because that's just a turnover waiting to happen. And so the digital culture piece is really complex and hard to do, but they also don't have the same relationships. Like when you and I first went to work and we were on premise, we got to, you know, you get to go to lunch with people and you get to the coffee chats and the water cooler conversations and, you know, stopping by the cubes in the offices and all this stuff. And you build these relationships in a face-to-face way. Now, again, we could force that through Zooms and all these other stuff, but I think we discount how important that is. In fact, I saw a study recently that it was new college grads, so Gen Zs, 98% said they would prefer to actually be on premise for their first job. And again, they want flexibility. So they want to be able to say, hey, it's a Monday. It's, you know, it's snowing. Like, I'm just going to work from home today. And like, and if you can, you can be effective. I think employers should be like, sure. Like, yeah, it seems crazy that you would even try to come in. But they also have said pretty loud and clear, they want that interaction with real people, you know, in a company. You know, this is kind of why they went to university to begin with. So when we sit there and say, hey, only 2% said they would prefer to be remote, that's a pretty telling to what the future of work looks like, especially around bringing in and training new workers.
Moving on to talk about the state of talent markets right now, I think for the last sort of 12 months, 18 months, we've been sort of, everyone's been making predictions about what recruiting is going to look like, what supply and demand are going to look like. And really what's happening in a number of markets in a number of countries has taken everyone by surprise. What are you seeing? What's your perspective on it?
Yeah, you know, I wish I could speak more intelligently on the global talent marketplace. The pandemic, that's one of the things that's probably shut that down a little bit, just because I haven't traveled internationally during that time. But within the US market, you know, right now we see this people desperately wanting to hire like hourly workers, right? And then there's this narrative out there that it's because of unemployment insurance extensions and stimulus, and where the government's actually paying people not to work more than what we, you know, employers could pay. And there is a part of that, right? There's no doubt that if you're in that $15 to $20 an hour kind of pay range in the US, if somebody's collecting unemployment in certain states with stimulus, they probably can make as much or more just being unemployed, right? So that a lot of that ends in September, and some states have already ended it. And so there's this belief that, the talent market's going to open up, you know, beginning September. And I'm like, slow down. Like, pre-pandemic, we were already struggling to hire hourly workers in a lot of markets. And also, I mean, almost next to impossible to hire skilled workers in many markets. So we have this like weird thing happening, right? So I think there's a number of things that happened during the pandemic. A lot of companies reduced their talent, like acquisition or, you know, TA teams or recruiting teams. They didn't put a lot of money and investment into their recruiting stack. And sometimes they just even like reduce their stack to kind of reduce expenses. And then they want to come back and like automatically go from like zero to 100 in terms of being able to like, hey, we did no recruiting to like, now we need to go full recruiting. By the way, it's not just full recruiting, we're desperate for recruiting. And so that's hurting us. We do have this Gen Z millennial kind of, you know, again, we kind of talk about this with every generation, but there's this mindset that, you know, maybe they're more purpose-driven in their work. And so they go, wait a minute, I can make $17 an hour working in an Amazon warehouse, you know, carrying boxes around. Like, that just doesn't seem like something I would want to do. And they would almost rather live at their parents' house and have no pay than go do that job, right? So there's this shift in mindset of around purpose of work. I also think we forget about, again, in the US market, like the baby boom generation, we've been knowing for like a decade or more, like that these people were leaving the workforce and people were like, yeah, but Tim, we're not hiring old people anyways for these hourly jobs. But if we really go back and take a look at all those baby boomer charts of when they were leaving, 2021, 2022, 2023 were actually the biggest parts of that wave, right? So there's more people leaving. And what happens is you see this kind of step up approach to hiring where, imagine a million baby boomers leave the market. What happens is somebody that would come in and maybe take that Amazon job at $17 an hour, all of a sudden now they can go and take a service rep job at an insurance company making $20 an hour, right? So there's a step up in employment. They almost get to skip like the lowest entry level jobs and go to a higher paying entry level job. And because so many people are leaving the marketplace from the employment marketplace with all these baby boomer people leaving, that now we're starting to see that. We're starting to see kids who maybe don't want to go to university graduating, you know, secondary like high school, and then immediately taking jobs making like $19, $20 an hour right out of high school because they just like, look, we just need young, aggressive, you know, semi-intelligent people that have an agility to learn, and we'll teach them a job, but they're going to skip the dirtiest, you know, jobs at $15 an hour kind of thing.
I think it's really interesting. And I think absolutely with these long-term factors, because I think if you look at lots of different countries around the world, they're in similar positions. There are short-term factors in play. So for example, in the UK, there's a problem recruiting workers in hospitality, and some of that's been putting down to the furlough scheme over here is continuing till September. And also we've had this lovely thing called Brexit, which has shut off large parts of the labor market. In Australia, their borders have been shut for 12 months and they're having problems sort of not able to bring talent into the country. So there are all these short to medium term issues, but I think, you know, you kind of nailed what some of the long-term issues are here. And this is not a problem that is going to go away at the end of September. And it's probably going to get worse.
I know. I tell people constantly, I'm like, this is not a like end of summer, like we'll be all of everything will be back to normal, taken care of. Like, this is truly, you better change the strategies of how you're getting this work done, whether that's automation, robotics, like blah, 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 a combination of a lot of things. You're going to have to increase pay. You're going to have to be better at your branding. You're going to have to, you know, train your managers to be better leaders of people, right? That, you know, because that's, we go back to, it seems like table stakes, right? It seems like we go back to like, weren't we talking about this stuff a decade ago in like great recession kind of stuff. But it's all the same kind of stuff that, you know, companies kind of took a year off of making their technology better, making their managers better, making, you know, and yet we still have this struggle of, we probably should have doubled down on like digital training, digital culture, digital, you know, all this stuff to make our people better. And we didn't. We kind of just waited around for the pandemic to end. And then we thought, oh, it'll be just back to normal. It's a new normal for sure.
What are you seeing in terms of changes to talent acquisition and how talent acquisition works? I mean, obviously, it's been a very disruptive time. There is this massive focus on talent acquisition in many organizations at the moment. What do you think is changing?
You know, the actual like function of talent acquisition tends to like, and this is in HR in general, and probably most functions in organizations, they actually change pretty slowly over time, right? Like there's not drastic changes, but what I've been seeing over the last probably 5 to 10 years is this gradual kind of change of corporate talent acquisition becoming much more like agency recruiting. I mean, they're starting to take on the metric funnels. They're starting to bonus and compensate a little bit differently. Their technology is becoming much more sophisticated. They're less, and again, this is a broad stroke because it's not happening everywhere, but I think with companies that are really, really reliant on getting the best talent to actually, you know, to do their work. And we all would say, we only get the best talent. Like, no, we don't. We just get the talent that's available for the most part. But the companies that are really going after talent have really kind of upped their game. Like their recruiters are actually recruiting. They're not just administering a recruiting function. And so I do see like this continuing to happen. And so when we take a look on the horizon, whether that's 3 years, 5 years down the road, especially in the US market. And we start to see this even in the UK market, right? Because the UK was always like, hey, for the most part, we're going to let agencies do our heavy recruiting for us. But we're starting to see many more European companies really be aggressive in the corporate talent acquisition space as well, and really take on a lot of these similarities and personalities of the agency recruiting market in-house. I thought this would have happened a decade ago, and it never really caught on. But I think it's starting to really take place, because I think we have executive teams, meaning the CEO, CO, like CTO, CIOs, like the C-suite in corporations going, hey, wait a minute, like people are really important. Why aren't we better at this? They're starting to ask questions, and like that talent acquisition leader is looking around going, well, wait a minute, we're still posting our jobs. And they're like, no, that's not enough. Like, why do these other people do it better than we do it? You know, and starting to ask the hard questions.
Absolutely. One of the previous times you were on the show, we were talking about the TA tech stack. And technology has been a sort of very big discussion point over the last 12 months, whether that's the rise of video interviewing, well, video everything, and automation and all these things going on. How have you seen the TA tech stack changing? And what do you think is going to happen next?
You know, we continue to see the increase in automation. So I think the hard part is it's easy to just to throw automation on stuff and say, hey, how do we automate the top, you know, 60% of the recruiting process, right? The outreach, the screen, you know, till we get basically to the interview, because you can definitely do that. The problem is you lose a lot of that kind of personal touch, right? That, you know, that we need in recruiting. So I do think we're starting to see much more automation that really tries to deliver that personal one-on-one touch. It doesn't feel like spam, right? It doesn't feel like mass automation. So it's this kind of one-on-one automation where I think you call it a human in a loop, right? Where at certain points in the automation, a real person can kind of step in and take control, right? So it's like, hey, we have somebody that we desperately need. They're interested. And all the machine learning and AI and all this stuff actually got us to this point. But you know what? It's time for us to step in and actually put some personal human touches on this process now and make sure we don't lose this person. And so we're definitely starting to see, you know, that side of it. I still think there's massive confusion, because what we see now are all these platform products that are out there that do some sourcing, that do some automation, that do some matching, that do some, you know, and there are people are like, well, wait a minute, doesn't my ATS do some of this? Doesn't a CRM do this? And we start to see this crossover of platforms happening, where a lot of the platforms do some things the same. Like they're like, well, I can text in my ATS. Well, oh yeah, well, we have texting too. Well, we have a chat bot. And like, well, I think my ATS has a chat. Like, you know, and then they're like, well, why would I have yours versus this? And there's always pieces, right? They're like, well, we don't have matching and outreach, or we don't have this. And I think it's caused a lot of confusion for TA leaders trying to figure out what they have, because of course the foundational side of ATS is like, wait a minute, we do that, you know. So they go, well, wait a minute, and then the recruiters who are actually using the tool go, well, wait a minute, it does it, but it's kind of clunky, or it's not, you know, it doesn't really work the way we need it to work. And of course, they're not going to change it. And that's why we want to bring in these kind of recruiting automation, you know, platforms. And so, you know, we continue to see this kind of this rise of all of this. And I also think like the screening assessment science has gotten much more sophisticated. We're out of the traditional like personality profile kind of matching stuff, right? Which is, in some aspects, we saw this with like HireVue, with kind of the facial recognition software stuff. You know, sometimes we push the envelope a little too fast and we have to kind of back it up. But I think the science has gotten to the point where it's helping us eliminate a lot of the bias we have. Like I've seen some really good products out there that will start to match and select, and you start to question, it'll show you across like your funnel. So you're like, hey, in our top of funnel, we have 50% female candidates, but by the time, and when we assess them, we still now have 50% female candidates, but through the first interview, we now only have 25% female candidates. So automatically you're seeing where the bias is happening within your process and within your stack. And I think that's really important as TA leaders can start to really look in, dig into that and say, wait a minute, here's where we systematically have like points of failure when it comes to, you know, bias and things like that.
Obviously, if you're a TA leader listening, you have a huge amount on your plate at the moment and a huge amount of things to focus on. What would your advice be to talent acquisition professionals in terms of, you know, what they should be thinking and focusing on over the next 6 months or so?
Wow, that's a big question. Because, you know, like it depends on, everyone has their own pain point and problem, right? and it's, you know, you and I both kind of, you know, deal with a lot of TA leaders and have these conversations. And I think if I, you know, just broadly speaking, I think still the most underutilized resource that every organization has is the database of candidates that have said that they've actually applied to come work for you at some point. They've said, hey, I love you, I want to come work for you. And we hired a tiny minute portion of those. And the rest, we screened some, we interviewed some. For the most part, the vast majority, we never even, you know, said hello to. And yet all of those people at one time said, hey, I want to come work for you. I'm making a choice that I want to come work for you. And we kind of forget about them. And some of these databases have millions of candidates. And it's the most underutilized resource across the world in talent acquisition. And so again, I would find technology that really digs into these databases that will match, that will do outreach, that will update through automation, because I think the ROI that you'll get on that is significantly higher than probably anything else that you'll ever put in your stack.
So looking forward to the future a bit, which I think the last 12 months has showed us is difficult to do, but I'm interested in terms of what's on your radar for the next 12 to 18 months to 2 years. What are you hoping that's going to happen? Where do you think we might be getting to?
You know, for how much we look at the future and think recruiting's changing because of technology, I do think there's a piece where I think what automation and all this recruiting automation, and there's some just really great, you know, technology out there, will do is actually add capacity to our recruiting teams, right? And then what that happens then is we actually have recruiters who become like really old school recruiters. They're the relationship builders. They're the ones that now you actually have time to actually talk to people and talk them into why they should come work for your job. And so, you know, I take a look at the future and go, for the most part, technology should be able to do all the administrative kind of heavy lifting of the process of recruiting, sourcing, all that good stuff. But it still comes back to having our teams of recruiters go out and actually build real relationships and then be able to measure the effectiveness of those, right? Like how is that conversion actually happening at that point? So I do think, you know, for how much we talk about the future of recruiting being completely robotic and automated, I think it actually gets more personable. I think that's what I think what candidates want that as well. I think at the end of the day, candidates want to feel wanted, and technology can only make them feel wanted so much. And then it goes back to us then have, you know, creating this personal relationship with candidates in a really fast way that makes them feel wanted.
Final question. Tell us about your podcast.
Yeah. So we started really almost the start of the pandemic. we started a podcast called HR Famous. And it was a joke, kind of an inside joke, the title. So because we were messing around with a ton of titles, you know, like, you know, we all do in the podcast world. And, you know, one of the funny things when you talk about influencers, and I think you and I are both considered influencers on a lot of lists and, you know, different things out there. And whether you put a positive connotation to influencer or a negative connotation to influencer, you know, some of the jokes on the inside would be, oh, so you're HR famous. You're not really famous. You're just HR famous. And so we always thought that was so funny because my wife would be like, yeah, you're not. You're a micro celebrity. There's like 15 HR TA ladies around the country that, you know, want a picture with you. And so we thought, let's call ourselves HR Famous. So it's Chris Dunn, Jessica Lee, myself. We all actually, Chris and Jessica were kind of the first two people at Fistful of Talent. I was brought in soon after. So we've all known each other for a really long period of time. And we've always had these text message exchanges, right? Where we would see something funny or see something interesting and we would share it with each other. And it blows up into this kind of 20, 30 minute back and forth, really kind of active conversation. And so that was what we wanted to go with. Like we want to just get on a podcast and show people what these kind of inside baseball conversations look like when we're just talking shop with each other. And there's a lot of trust between the three of us. So we know if we say something, especially in today's world and the cancel cultures and people getting just triggered by anything, we know at the end of the day, we all have each other's back and trust each other implicitly. So if we say something wrong, you know, that somebody would be triggered by, we know that the three of us would never, we know that behind there's probably something like, you know, there, like at the heart of it, there's something there that's not meant to be the way it was said or thought of. Right. So I think that allows us to have a lot of freedom to really kind of sometimes ask some questions that people would not ask in a public way. Right. You know, and so there's some of that. I mean, for the most part, though, I think people just love to hear the conversation. It's like, you know, Matt, when you and I sit down at HR Tech and we're at what's one of like Eye Candy, one of those bars in the middle of the casino, right? And it's 1 o'clock in the morning and we're a few drinks in and we're having these kind of dynamic conversations about the world of talent acquisition and technology. This is the conversations we have. Like, this is what it's like. Minus the drinks. It might be better with drinks.
Absolutely. You should do a kind of a bar version of it. Definitely. Now, I was going to ask you where people can listen to it, but obviously it's customary at this point to say, I presume that's available wherever people get their podcasts.
Exactly. Yeah. All the normal podcast channels.
Fantastic stuff. Tim, thank you very much for talking to me.
Great talking with you, Matt.
My thanks to Tim Sackett. You can subscribe to this podcast in Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, or via your podcasting app of choice. Please also follow the show on Instagram. You can find us by searching for Recruiting Future. You can search through all the past episodes at recruitingfuture.com. On that site, you can also subscribe to the mailing list to get the inside track about everything that's coming up on the show. Thanks very much for listening. I'll be back next time, and I hope you'll join me.
This is my show.
Welcome, change agents, to your go-to place for stories that ignite your spirit, fuel your purpose, and connect us all. We believe in the incredible power of the human spirit, its boundless resilience, and the inspiration it brings to our lives. On the Driving Change podcast, we'll journey together through the extraordinary yet very relatable experiences of some of the most amazing people on earth. Our mission? That through these stories, we might just spark change within you and awaken a newfound motivation to harness your unique gifts to make a real difference in the world. So get ready to be inspired and join us on this incredible adventure. You can find the Driving Change podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you love listening to your favorite podcasts.